podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast, the first one in 2018, as we now get pretty close to the midway point of the regular season. Not exactly there yet, but we are over the hump of the Christmas break, which is sort of a, like, the NBA is kind of like welcome back for a lot of the fans who are in that, you know, in the HUD that is football obsession. Now that football is slowly weeding itself out of the spotlight, save for the of course the NFL playoffs, which are still in full swing. Now the NBA is starting to take its turn, and there's a few things that we have to do some cleaning up for, since we had, it's been a little while since we did our last episode, a little bit of house cleaning, a lot of season catch up that we have, and then a lot of things regarding the new year that gives us a point of reflection. You know, things that we feel like for some teams that maybe they had regrets, maybe they have some resolutions that they want to come up with as the season goes along. Some of these teams not necessarily in the hunt anymore, but we're going to see as I talk to my co-host right here, Mr. Adam Murray. Adam, how was your new year?
It's overrated.
That, why did I totally expect that reaction?
Why are we celebrating just, it's just another day. Oh, I need to go buy a new calendar. Okay, what's changed? Absolutely nothing.
Well, you get the day off. For most people. Not everybody gets a day off on New Year's Day.
I don't get the day off.
Oh, so you're just mad that you didn't get the day off.
Oh, I'll gladly work that day. I'll gladly, you know, to get double time or get a free day off. It's, I value my vacation. Sitting at home on the first is to do what? Watch crappy college football bowls. I know. Here's an idea. Why is ESPN losing money? I know. Let's buy the rights to every bowl and put them on the exact same times.
Well, now that John Gruden's going to the Raiders, that's one less contract they have to worry about.
Yeah, there you go. You got rid of him, so you could keep three other people now.
Yeah, maybe on the NBA side, maybe Jeff Van Gundy. Because, you know, Van Gundy, didn't he coach in the Goodwill games? Yeah. And they won a gold medal. Maybe he wants to get back into the fray.
To go where the coaching positions in the NBA, those teams are not looking too good. Whereas,
it's not just that. It's just that coaching positions pop up like gophers on Groundhog's Day. Like, it's, they're everywhere.
But football, you can turn your team around in 2 years.
But have you seen the bloodletting that has been the NFL coaching carousel this season? It's, you know, outside of Marvin Lewis, who's just going to survive along with Keith Richards and cockroaches when the apocalypse arrives, pretty much every other team that we thought might fire their coach, fired their coach.
Well, the thing is, look at the playoffs. Who could be, like, it's Tennessee and Jacksonville and Buffalo and the LA Rams. It's like, well, these
people
teams
thought if Tennessee didn't win that playoff game, that malarkey was going to go.
It's these teams are all terrible that are in the playoffs are historically terrible. So, yeah, you have a lot of shock and, you know, Detroit. Well, okay, you've had plenty of time to do something. What have you done? Oh, absolutely nothing. Oh, New York, you know, Giants. Well, you squandered every situation in the worst media market.
And then there's the big elephant in the room, which is the whole, are they or are they not getting along scuttlebutt in New England, which we'll just not even talk about because that's just too long a discussion and just too much smoke, but there's no fire, if that makes sense.
It's one ESPN article. And everyone's like, okay, what? Brady, he's 40. He has, you know, he doesn't have a ton of years left in him. Belichick is old and makes $12 million a year. Kraft,
now's the time to pull the trigger on a troll article.
Which is basically what it was. Oh, they fight. Yeah, but they win. If they didn't win, it's a problem. That's why, you know, the heyday, the Cowboys were a train wreck. But they kept winning, so everything was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's all it takes is, oh, we're winning, so we can deal with, you know, Gronk stupidness. And
well, it also gives them that sense of, like, compare. You go into a macro sense and you can compare the dynasties. Like, oh, if the Patriots, if the Belichick Brady dynasty ends and where do we compare it and why did they break up? This happened with the Bulls in the late 90s, where in 1998, it wasn't even about the season anymore. Even if the Bulls had lost to the Jazz or the Pacers even in the Eastern Conference Finals, which came really, really close. Like, it wasn't even as much about whether they would lose. It was just, how does it all end? What does it all mean? Where do they stand with the rest? And I guess that's what a lot of these narratives are when they're concocted by news organizations, is you're not as much worried about how they do as in where do they compare to the others. Now, I know that's a results-driven, you know, type of thing. Like, if the Warriors don't win a championship this season, then – obviously, that hurts your legacy when you compare them to, like, the Bulls and the Lakers. But it's almost like they're waiting until the Warriors start to fall apart after their cap space starts to kick in, or the shrinking cap space starts to kick in.
Which, you know,
and then they start doing all of that. Well, are the Warriors in trouble? Is there trouble in paradise? All that stuff.
You know, yeah, the same thing now with LeVar Ball trying to be, the Lakers don't want to play for him.
Oh, God.
They've quit
not
on
again
him.
With LeVar Ball and the Lithuania trip.
Not the Lithuania trip. The Lakers have quit on the coach, and we need to get rid of him, and we're getting LeBron, and we need all this. And, you know, it doesn't matter your kid isn't doing good at all.
Well, here's the funniest part, too. This idea that, oh, I could get these AAU kids to play for $10,000 if I concoct a league that would be, like, similar to AAU. Here's the thing. I guarantee you those kids are probably getting paid better in AAU right now.
Well, see that? Okay, that's an interesting point. Because, okay, instead of going to college, they'll do his league for $10,000 a month. But what if there's injuries? Well, now you can't go to college because you've lost. You can't get a scholarship.
You
got to
get
there.
Some kind of Lloyd's of London insurance policy. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's $10,000 a month. How long is your season going to be? 4 months. So you're making $40,000, and then that's it. And you have to hope you're NBA worthy based upon that. I mean, I give him credit for trying to keep marketing himself and marketing everything. It's just, well, you might have. You know, you need other people with you, smarter investors, as opposed to, I'm going to create this league. People are going to totally join it. Yeah, you're going to get fringe prospects who are, you know, not going to be anything. Like the G League now is completely dead.
When you say dead, do you mean buzz?
The buzz and the two-way contracts have killed it. Because nobody's getting a 10-day call-up because you already have two roster spots for your two picks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, where's the next Yogi Ferrell? Where's the next Sean Kilpatrick?
And you can't undo a two-way contract mid-season. Once it's signed, it's signed.
No, you can undo it.
Yeah. Oh, you can?
Yeah.
That's a shock to me.
People have gotten cut from them already. Some have been made good, and, you know, they had the – Mike James was the first one to get a full-time deal, then he got cut immediately.
Were you surprised that Mike James got cut? Because his numbers in filling in were actually quite good.
Yeah, they were, but that's Phoenix, and we'll get to Phoenix later in regrets. But
yes.
You had Bobby Brown for Houston. They converted his to a 10-day deal, and they cut him to sign Gerald Green.
Oh, you're blowing my mind now. I need to do my CBA research now.
Jacob Pullen had one for Philly. He got cut, and they signed James Young. Sean Kilpatrick had his deal for the, you know, for the Nets.
He got cut because they had to make room for Okafor.
And
yeah.
So some team – I forget. I think Utah signed him to a two-way deal then, and his money's now prorated from it. So, no, you can cut people from a two-way deal. Like, Milwaukee, I think, has had four people. James Young was on a two-way deal there. Now he's on a two-way deal with Philly.
So what you're saying is the ability to flex the two-way deal has been giving them more options to just let players go so that there's not as much consistency on their G League.
It doesn't count against the cap, so...
Yeah, so basically it's just no rhyme or reason or no stability to the G League roster because they could just cut freely at any point any player.
It's something like deals need to be made good by January 7th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's when the 10 days start to pop up.
Yeah, because I think Atlanta had Pat Connaughton and somebody else. They guaranteed their deals, but other people are getting cut. And it's just like, well, how are people getting cut from two-way deals? And then, well, now there's no 10-day call-up because the Celtics don't need somebody because you have Kadeem Allen who's sitting there in Maine on a D-League on a two-way contract.
But can that be transitioned, the G-League's lack of – the lack of consistency with good players coming through the G League this early this season to the depth of the league as a whole? the fact that so many teams have – even the worst teams like the Chicago Bulls, the Atlanta Hawks, the Sacramento Kings even, they all have fairly deep rosters in terms of just average NBA talent.
Well, with the G League, don't forget, expansion dilutes the player pool. So you had how many new teams in the past 3 years? Like, the league literally doubled. So you're going to get, you know, the fringest of the fringe college players in there now.
Yes.
Just to be like, okay, well, you know, you look at the G League rosters, there's people from Division III schools all over the place. It's like, I've never heard of...
And Summer League holdovers. Hey, he played well in Summer League, let's give him a shot. You know?
Yeah, and that's, you know, it'll take a couple years for the G League to develop as a legitimate thing. It's just, this two-way contract has killed that. Who's going to be that next superstar?
Do you think Facebook Live has hurt them at all? Do you think the ESPNU coverage has hurt them at all? Because it makes it more available, which gives fans less reason to search for it.
No. No, any time you get somebody's eyes on it is a good thing. And you look at the people, they're pulling constantly 1,000 people, so it's not like these arenas have like 10, you know, they're not empty, so there is some sort of draw.
It's not Summer League, though, because we talked about this before the season started, is that Summer League's become a big buzz type of venture in Las Vegas, because not just that it's a good excursion site for tourists and for fans, but in like a destination place, but also you got good players in those games.
Well, that's okay. It's become a destination, but where's the other Summer Leagues at? Orlando, it was in a gym.
Utah, I believe, is being cut out next year.
Yeah, Utah's being cut out, but the arena would be empty for half the games that Utah wasn't
in. Well, they would play it in the Jazz's home arena. Of course it looked empty. You know?
Well, you see, that's the thing, is you've taken it into a spectacle as opposed to an empty gym in Orlando or an empty NBA arena. So that's different. But, you know, the G League... It's growing, and it's a good thing, but you look at the rosters, who's the one who's getting all the minutes, getting all the time? It's these two-way contract players, and then the people who got sent down from the NBA, and other than that, it's just like, well, there's no breakout superstars.
Yeah, it's like a priority. It's almost like a priority spot. Like, you're the guy now, we're going to give you this contract.
Yeah, like, where is the Quinn Cook? Where's the Briante Webbers from last year? Like,
I just caught Briante Weber with the Rockets, right?
He's somewhere now.
I think he was filling in because of the James Harden injury with his hamstring, I believe, where he filled in at the guard spot. And they actually played against the Warriors, whose roster he was on right before they cut him, before they went onto their playoff run and won the championship.
Yes. So it's just an interesting time for this expansion. And so, yes, now let's get into some regrets.
Okay, so this is a theme that we've had with the New Year's resolution / New Year's hangover / New Year's regrets. Are you one to get tipsy on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve?
No, that's for the young people.
That's for the – oh, so you're not young.
How are you going to bring in, 2018, it's a new year, new resolutions. I know, let's get so sloppily drunk on the 31st, so the first of the year you're just hungover and don't want to do anything.
Mm-hmm. Now that's saved up for July for a lot of teams, but not necessarily all these decisions. Some of these ones that we're going to be talking about with NBA teams are respective to like New Year's regrets or any kind of resolution that they want to try to figure out so that they could get themselves out of the mess that they're in. A lot of these decisions were made at different points and for different reasons, but I wanted you to just go ahead and show me your results, show me your findings, and
exactly.
Let's go ahead.
We will. Find I will. The you can. I will pitch some ideas to you. You will tell me if they regret the decision, because, like you said, it's the end of the year. Everything. Okay, what happened in 2017? Let's look at our books. Mm-hmm. Wow, I can't believe we did that. What were we thinking? You know, we researched this. We paid guys millions of dollars who told us to do this. And, what were we thinking? So I'm going to pitch you some teams and some ideas, and you're going to tell me whether they regret it or no, it's fine. Just weather it out. It wasn't, you know, not the smartest of moves, but it's still, they'll be fine. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So here we go. We'll start with a softball. Atlanta. We've been saying it for 3 years now. You have to blow up your team. You can't compete. They didn't do it, and then their roster is so bare of prospects. They have no draft picks from other teams.
Okay, here's the thing. It was either that or keep Dwight Howard's contract. Now, yes, you took on a really bad Miles Plumlee contract in the process of dumping Dwight Howard, but it was more of a symbolism that they were starting over. So I would say that not that they're fine in this sense, that they have to be fine. Because if you did it any other way, you were going to screw yourself anyway. Like, if you tried to re-sign Paul Millsap again, even on a three-year deal, you probably would have screwed your cap space for the next 3 years when you were trying to rebuild. Did they screw up in the draft? You know, I'll argue against that. Like, I thought they did okay with Torian Prince. John Collins has played well as a rookie. I think they've hit some doubles. They haven't hit a home run. I agree with that. But so I don't think they're in the biggest mess humanly possible.
But here's the thing with cap room and rebuilding. You also have five other teams doing it now.
Yes.
So your cap room means nothing if you have other teams who have just as much cap room.
But does that mean paying Kent Bazemore over $17 million a year? No. I understand that somebody needs to take that space because you have to hit a cap cap floor. But that's a situation where it's like, okay, did we take on too much? Now, did you disagree? Let's go all the way back to 2016. Did you disagree with them trading Jeff Teague and siding with Dennis Schroeder?
No,
because that was the beginning of the unloading process for the Atlanta Hawks.
But they had a chance last year to dump Millsap and trade him and start it, but they said no, and they went all in.
Because they asked for too much in the trade deadline, yes.
They went in, and now they've been left with nothing. Okay.
Listen, it's a horrible team. I believe they're clocking in as the worst in the league, record-wise, or am I standing corrected? They're at 10-28 right now. I know the Bulls have a better record than that.
I think the Lakers are worse right now.
Wow.
Lakers are closer right there.
I mean, they're awful. They're an awful team. They're going to be competing for a top draft pick this year. But they got it. I'll say this. There's a dot, dot, dot there with Atlanta when I say that they're fine. They've got to make good in the draft. They got to get a good top five pick in the draft.
Okay. Chicago, the whole Jimmy Butler trade.
Well, the Jimmy Butler trade, it depends on what you think of Lauri Markkanen, because he's forever going to be tied with that trade because the draft pick was attached to it. So what
and
do you
gave
think of,
a draft let me ask pick you this. Away.
What do you think of Lauri Markkanen?
Lauri Markkanen is good. I've had no problem with him as a stretch four. It's just you gave Butler and a pick,
mm-hmm.
which made it seem like Butler was damaged goods or he's a cancer or you've totally undervalued him, and you basically chose Fred Hoiberg over Jimmy Butler.
They also got Chris Dunn in the trade. Chris Dunn has been very good his second year. He hasn't been great all the time, but he is so much better than
he was.
He's
shown why he was number four pick.
He is like not even remotely close to what he was his rookie year in Minnesota. Now, a lot of people would blame that on Minnesota and Thibodeau not being able to develop players, and he's starting to get a lot of that backlash now in Minnesota, maybe rightfully so. But in Chicago, you're starting to see signs.
We will get to Minnesota in a second. Okay. Cleveland, by still being the LeBrons.
I know you're really hammering on the Cavaliers and their safe to say Cavalier business strategy. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes.
Where LeBron was basically saying, look, if you're going to put a new GM in here, we're going to have to do things my way. And Kyrie Irving was shipped out with Isaiah Thomas coming in return. Now, let me ask you this. Is a lot of the stuff that is going on with Cleveland, does it have a little bit of a question mark? Because we're not sure yet about the byproduct of Isaiah Thomas because he just recently came back. Looked good in the two games, but we haven't really seen him in full strength yet.
Or are we still in denial where they think that they got the best gift ever and there's still no hangover?
Here's the problem I have with Cleveland right now. Last year, they kind of relaxed themselves to the point where they were actually willing to give up the one seed in the East because they knew that Boston, even with home court, couldn't beat them. And they wound up being correct. Now, the shoe's on the other foot now that Kyrie's in Boston, and they have the one seed as it stands right now in the East, and Isaiah Thomas is getting ready to come back for Cleveland. And LeBron's numbers are fantastic. Kevin Love's looked really good. They had I believe a 13 game winning streak at one point in the regular season, even though they hit a dip after that when they did their West Coast trip. You know, they've looked really good. But here's the one issue I have with Cleveland. They've almost doubled down on the taking it easy part, because now they're letting Toronto get the 2 seed ahead of them. At what point is it? We saw this with the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, where they kind of started to sink in the regular season rankings because they knew they could beat those teams without home court. But when is it too much? That's my question.
They're just not being competitive. They're not destroying people like they used to.
I don't. They do look competitive in the games because it's LeBron. LeBron doesn't give up.
I meant like. They're not destroying teams.
They're not making a statement, is what you mean.
Yes.
Yes. Now we're getting into our ABC primetime mode, which means we're getting close to the All-Star break. That's usually what that represents now when we start seeing those primetime games. But do you feel like that's a time frame for the Cavs to start, you know, hitting the go meter, or do you feel like that they have another gear that they haven't hit yet?
I don't even... I wanted to say there's a second gear, but Jay Crowder hasn't been good, and what's, you know... We know Isaiah's going to come in and be great, but what's going to happen when, you know, playoffs come and LeBron's going to need the ball in the fourth quarter? Because, you know, Isaiah was just Mr. Fourth Quarter, and that's not going to happen anymore.
Well, here's the theory. The theory out there is that, well, they've had all these plays that they had for Kyrie Irving. They basically kept it on layaway waiting for IT to come in, and now they can just unlock all of those plays. It's almost like 2K, where you can just unlock all those play sets now that you got IT. But here's the thing. Even though they have similar efficiencies in the fourth quarter and they're both high-volume scorers, Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving are very different players. You know, you see that from year to year with the Celtics. It's just, it's not like you can plug in Isaiah Thomas. It's like, okay, you're just going to do the Kyrie Irving weave sets. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Do you feel like they'll be able to do more backcourt centric stuff that they were able to do with Kyrie that was successful to give LeBron a blow with Isaiah Thomas is the question I'm asking.
That's sort of the question we're all asking, is what's going to happen. And then what's going to happen with, you know, Thomas's defensive liabilities.
Do you think Tristan Thompson's injury has actually been a bit of a blessing in disguise because it's given more pick and roll spots to Kevin Love?
Well, it's basically put Kevin Love back in the roster. If not,
at the spot, yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to just, well, he's there and you don't hear this is the first year. Well, they need to trade Kevin Love because he's expendable. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, they're still good and their bench is ridiculously deep. I mean, Derrick Rose is just sitting there. What's he doing? Pondering? Like, what? Sometimes I want, like, they say he's been out for so many games with an ankle, and it's like, no, I don't think anything's wrong with him. I think he just doesn't want to play anymore. It's almost like LeBron did a favor. He said, look, we're going to keep you on a guaranteed contract here, but you, when you're ready to play, come back and play.
Okay.
But it's still a very deep bench for Cleveland. It just, yeah, I don't feel like they've punched anyone in the face yet. I agree with what you're saying.
All right, Denver. Tim Connelly and Arturis Karnišovas.
I think you just wanted to say that name. I think that was the only reason you even mentioned them.
No, there's methods behind this. They have developed this roster that makes no sense, and then sort of can't even play with each other anymore.
Albeit a good roster. Is it a good problem to have, or is it a bad problem to have because if things go sideways, it could all fall apart type of thing?
Well, they're good, but they're not going to be upper echelon. They're not breaking into that top four, nor does it look like they can break into that top four. I love, you know, I'm the biggest supporter of Cousin Jamal, but he averages like 2 assists a game.
Yeah, he's not an assist man. He's not a point guard. Trey Lyles has come alive.
But then you have Plumlee, you have Jokic, you have Kenneth Faried, who's now out of the roster because there's no room for him. You have Millsap. You have like 20 power forwards and then 20 combo guards.
I haven't watched too many of their games. How's Millsap fit in the last month? I know they were force feeding him early in the season. Are they doing the same thing, or has it been a bit of a square peg round hole situation?
It's not as smooth as it was before.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely Jokic's. Well, Jokic has sort of become their point guard. He's been almost averaging like a triple-double.
Well, he's the point center. Gary Harris leads the team in scoring. Gary Harris is weird. He'll have a game where he just shits the bed, and then he'll have just this fantastic game where he's like a two-way player. So it's hard to kind of figure out what you're going to get out of him. Moutier has almost been subsided. Like, it's almost at the point where I would be shocked if he wasn't traded. Kenneth Faried's out of the rotation completely. Mike Malone has already been quoted as saying that. So,
oh yeah, they've given up on Faried on Faried. Oh, they sort of given up on Faried and Moutier. The problem is they just have no value, and they're not going to have value, I don't think.
No, because they've already put Wancho in that like reserve power forward spot.
Yeah, they've and he's not even getting a ton of minutes.
Nope.
So it's just you're relying on just like I said, you have these two GMs and what are they building? There's no vision. There's no vision.
And everybody's and here's the other problem. You know, we know the whole situation with Jokic where, you know, they have a bit of a predicament of do you decline it and then max him out now, or do you take the risk of or do you just go ahead and try to get him in as an RFA and try to do an offer sheet? I mean, that's the one like really sticky situation for Denver. Outside of that, everything's sealed up. Plumlee's locked in. Harris is locked in. Murray's on a rookie contract. Millsap's just a year into his new deal. I think
one
who's kind of twisting in the wind is Will Barton. Is that correct?
Barton has up and down games. The thing I'm just going to mention so we don't sound like complete idiots. The reason you don't hear much about Millsap is because, remember, I think it was the beginning of December.
Oh, yeah. I just noticed the number of games played. Yeah.
He broke his wrist and he's been out. So that's why. But that's why you haven't heard from him. But even like just they're not.
That now you just got my expertise on Denver Nugget games. Congratulations to all the listeners of Place to Be Nation.
No, like, but I knew it's like how's he doing? It's like, well, he's not fitting. Oh yeah, well, he's not in the roster. I meant, you know, when he was there, he wasn't fitting in. They were still forcing him. It wasn't.
I totally blanked on the injury. There have been quite a few injuries. Blake Griffin's been out twice since we've been away. Curry had what looked like a pretty scary ankle injury. He just came back and scored 45 points and a half or three quarters.
Okay. Yep. So that brings my next thing. Lakers. I mean, not Lakers, Clippers, for knowing you're betting on an injured team.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, hey, Gallinari, here's a ton of money. Oh, you're out with an injured buttocks. Okay, freak injury Griffin, here's a max deal. Oh, you're out twice already with freakish injuries.
Yeah, one was a concussion. That's the most recent one. The other, the earlier one, I think, was an MCL sprain. A very random instance where he got undercut by his own player. I think it was Austin Rivers.
Yeah, and then Rivers roll up on him.
And then JaVale McGee elbowed him by accident, and that's how he got the concussion just recently.
Yeah, so little regrets on saying we all know, like, you're betting on glass.
Here's the thing. The Patrick Beverley injury was so devastating for them because not only that, you lost Mio Teodosic twice to injuries, and so you're gone. Your pass first point guard is gone, and your best probably – your best defensive player not named DeAndre Jordan is gone. You know, and then when they had the Blake Griffin injury, they got really thin in the backcourt and they had to rely on Austin Rivers and Lou Williams. And, you know, everyone pisses on Doc Rivers. People are counting that even on this show, we've counted the days till he gets axed. But I got to tell you, the Clippers fought like hell to stay relevant while Blake was out. You know, Lou Williams lit up some teams. Even coming off the bench, he had like 30.6 different times.
Yeah,
you know?
He's having this weird renaissance of just I'm going to shoot everything and everything's going in. So
I saw one game with the Rockets where Juwan Evans just super checked on James Harden to the point where Harden, I don't know if we have a Houston section on this one, but what do you think of this whole trend that's going on where James Harden is trying to challenge the refs into calling him on push-offs?
It's just an ego thing, and yeah, that whole Boston game where Well, you know, I didn't do it. I'm going to do the exact same thing, and
that
I dare
to – That was the second one. The first one, though, was against the Clippers where he was clearly frustrated because let's be honest. Jawan Evans is a rookie. He's a lesser player. So he's sitting there, and he's checking him, and he does a push off. The first one was an egregious flop. It was an egregious flop off of a made three out of bounds under his own basket. And he and Evans flopped. They called it. Harden had that – you know how players have that – like, they do that confused look when, like, subconsciously, you know, that they're trying to say, I'm really pissed off right now, but they don't want to show it to the referees because they don't want to get technical. Uh-huh. So that passive aggressive nature. Well, he did that. Then he did a really egregious one at midcourt on Evans where he just, like, shoved him from behind. And he said, he was almost daring the referee to call it, and he called it. Then he popped the ball out of the referee's hands as time was running out, and he fouled out just to be an asshole, you know, and then he got an ejection. The Celtic game was a few days later on TNT. That was Marcus Smart, not Jawan Evans. Both from Oklahoma State, ironically.
Yep.
But, yeah, Smart, that's his deal. You know this. Like, that's what he does. He coaxes people into he pisses off a lot of players. But he's very solid defensively, and he can guard 1 through 5.
Yep, that's the frustrating nature of him, and he can't shoot for anything.
But for Harden, let's just finish this up. Do you think that could be a trend in the playoffs where teams will try to coax him trying to get him mad by being physical?
Well, that's playoff basketball. Playoff basketball is always more physical.
Yeah, but maybe Harden can't handle that. That's why my argument is that he's not a leader. That's why they needed a Chris Paul. Chris Paul on the floor can't be the leader anymore. That showed after Harden's injury, because when he went out with the hamstring, they played the Warriors. Chris Paul was running the show. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it.
Well, the thing with Chris, that team is built for Harden, just the quick run and score. That's not Chris Paul. Chris Paul's a leader, but Chris Paul's a slow-down, methodical, you know, cerebral pace, not let's just run and gun.
Mm-hmm. And, well, that's the problem, though, when they play the Warriors, is that I think the Chris Paul, no matter how good of a team you put around him is, if you centralize a team around Chris Paul, he's always going to be doomed against the Warriors because his strength is being a pass-first point guard, getting everyone involved. Well, no one is better than that as a team than the Golden State Warriors. You cannot match that. So you can try to counter it with defense, but that's the best you can do.
Yep. Okay, moving on. Memphis for choosing Gasol over Fizdale.
Yeah, immediate regrets. Immediate regrets. I mean, it's par for the course for an owner to take the player's side on an NBA franchise and to fire the coach. It's almost like you have to do it at this point. Would you agree with that? Because
no,
of history?
Not necessarily.
This ain't the NFL. I mean, this isn't one of these things where the coaches run the program or in college football, or they run the organization and the GM runs the organization in the NFL. So if you make them mad, they're going to ship you out and they can cut your contract without too much of a cap hit. Whereas in the NBA, if you're a superstar or if you're on a superstar contract at a max level, I mean, that's your team. You run that team.
Yeah, you do, but it's just one of those, you know, this isn't a case where you're picking the, you know, a locker room cancer over a coach or something like that. This is just, you know, Gasol is up there in years now, and you took away somebody
who's... So you're looking at it from the perspective of what can he provide me? What can he provide me in the future versus what Fizdale could have provided me had I retained him?
Yeah, and the team wasn't built to win. The team is, you know, if you have Deniana Davis and Ivan Rabb and, you know, your first-round pick from last year, Wayne Baldwin, you cut already. And
you had to rely on Dylan Brooks for significant minutes, even though he's
you have Dylan Brooks, and you brought a second-round player from Europe and cut him immediately, so your cap room is screwed, and your coach had no chance, but you don't want to admit it's a rebuild, but you have no chance of being good.
And it got even more depressing for the news that it looks like they don't have a timetable for Mike Conley's return, which is not encouraging to say the least. Mm-hmm. I think they know it's a lost season.
Okay, immediate. Well, the ownership doesn't.
Yeah.
That's why you pick Gasol over Fizdale, and you're not going to get any better. Okay, Phoenix, Sean McDonough.
Well, he got an extension. So it doesn't really matter what we think, unless Robert Sarver just decides to, like, scorch earth and start over from scratch again. like that matters anymore because they're sort of at the bottom already. You know, Phoenix has pulled out a few wins. You know, they try to be competitive. You know, I see some Marquise Chris sightings every now and then. Didn't they have that one against Memphis where Tyson Chandler got the alley-oop with like less than half of a second left?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple little bright spots with Phoenix every now and then. Devin Booker had a really crazy game against the Philadelphia 76ers. Is Devin Booker a superstar or an all-star? Would you say either, both, or neither?
All-star.
Okay.
Superstar, no, because right now he's just a stats guy on a bad team.
But 70 points.
But who else is shooting anything on that team?
You know I'm always going to mention 70 points.
Yeah, but who is he making better? But remember, off-season, hey, you want to trade Kyrie for Eric Bledsoe, Josh Jackson, and Marquise Chris?
And we won't give up Josh Jackson in a potential three-way with Kyrie, which is now becoming like one of those, I cannot believe they did that type of regrets.
Josh Jackson is untouchable. Josh mm-hmm. Jackson, statistically the worst player in the NBA right now.
That proposal has been brought up in almost every article about the Kyrie Irving trade that I have read.
You know, would it have made Phoenix better? Not really.
No, but they would have at least been somewhat relevant.
They would have had to make other moves with him, which they probably could have done. But it's just, you chose Josh Jackson over Kyrie Irving, and yet you still somehow have a job after every other blunder you've done.
Yeah.
And you botched the Eric Bledsoe trade. You botched everything he's done in the past 3 years. He's botched his two first-round picks, two lottery picks last year were the exact same position.
They went all the way to the tender year with Alex Len, and they've gotten nothing out of him. Now he's damaged goods.
Well, that's more of...
My problem with that is McDonough could have traded him a year or two earlier and gotten at least something.
He could have traded him. That's just Earl Watson.
Yeah.
That's just your coach not developing anything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the roster is still quite bad after you get past Booker. Tyler Ulis, I mean, I'll still harp on it. I think Ulis is a fairly good NBA point guard. Would you agree?
No.
Or you still need to see more?
He's backup third stringer at best.
Okay, so you're really against the grain on where I'm going with it.
I'm not against him, but what is he doing that's so great that makes him a starter in the league?
I think his defense is scrappier than people expect, and I think
one other team he could start for in the NBA.
I think he could start for Philadelphia because of the lack of position that they have because of Fultz's injury.
Okay, you can say that, but I don't
think... if I had to, like, look at some other teams, I mean, he could be a backup in Toronto.
He could be a backup anywhere. So
but you said third string.
Backup or third string,
backup
because,
third string.
You know, third string, you know, he's not bench warmer.
You think he could start for the Knicks?
No, you got... Frank isn't terrible
Do
in
not,
small doses.
You cannot tell me Frank Ntilikina is better than Tyler Ulis.
Frank has an upside. Frank's mm-hmm. also, you know, won, 30 games into the season where he's learning to play a whole new system. Tyler Ulis has a whole year under him.
Would you play Elfrid Payton or Tyler Ulis?
Oh, Elfrid Payton.
Oh, wow. You're not, I know you're not an Elfrid Payton fan, so that's saying a lot.
No, he's just a backup. Tyler mm-hmm. Ulis, what is he? No, is he, you know, he's just an undersized guard. Okay, he's fine for a backup. You know, Tyus Jones level.
But you make a good point. That Tyus Jones is another good example of one who, because of Jeff Teague injury, has really shown up a little bit. Like, what do you think of him?
Thibodeau is the problem. And I didn't put Minnesota on the list of regrets, but you don't go from, okay, Teague gets 40 minutes, and all of a sudden, okay, Tyus, you're in. Well, you now get his 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need roster distribution.
Mm-hmm. Let's just finish with the Suns here. Where do you go with Josh Jackson? I cannot just say – like, we saw this with Kelly Oubre with the Wizards where people just immediately wanted to pan the pick, and now Oubre's starting to really find his stride. There's got to be a point where Josh Jackson, despite the inefficiency, will find his way, but how long will it take?
He could have it – you know, all players should get 2 years.
Yeah, because he's only at, like, 9 points, 3.5 rebounds, less than one assist. His field goal percentage is shit. Like, he's – it can only go up from here is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but then again, that's the same thing we said about Moutier, and we waited for Ben McLemore to do anything.
Well, you're right. You want to match the timing where once you start winning, the players start to improve, and that doesn't always happen.
Exactly. And, okay, just moving on quickly, Portland.
Portland's offense has gotten incredibly stale, which is shocking to say because they have two of the, 10 best guards in the NBA?
You have two of the 10 best guards who are the exact same player.
Yeah, so they both but McCollum's have the same... got that mid-range stuff going on, and Lillard's just a
But they both have the same pluses, and they both have the same minuses. You spent your you spent a high draft pick on Zach Collins, who's terrible. You have Caleb Swanigan, who was good and then disappeared.
Their spacing is awful with Aminu and Harkless, who's been in, like, bench hell to the point where they've had to play Pat Connaughton ahead of him.
Noah Vonleh is still terrible.
The Moda Center despises Myers Leonard, despises him.
So, you know, are they having sort of their hangover of we swung the pendulum too far one way, so we swung it the other way, and now we have a glut of big men who can't play, and we still have two guards who can't do anything. We have no mid-range players.
Do you think their bench is a little better than people think because of Swanigan? You know, even guys like Jake Lehman and Noah Vonleh, who – I mean, Vonleh's been around for a while now. He's started 12 games for him already. I feel like Vonleh can provide at times. But
no, it's his fourth year. He should be doing something by now. And he's still – you can't be the training wheels on him.
But six rebounds a game is not terrible. Like, he's trying out there. But it's just maybe he needs another change of scenery. Maybe sometimes some players they need to move around a few times to get the point of, all right, I'm going to get lost if I don't start making headway. You know, that happened to Bismack Biyombo.
Yep, but then you had the Crabbe and Turner and Harkless. Let's sign all of them. And Harkless, like you said, he's there, then he disappears. And Swanigan is there and disappears. And if you're relying on Jake Lehman and Pat Connaughton to be your talking points, that's not a good sign.
Nurkic has still played pretty well. Napier has given him some good backup play at point guard, but when Napier is like one of your de facto backups, that's not good. That's not good.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to bundle these two together.
Okay.
Sacramento 3 years for George Hill, Utah signing Ricky Rubio.
Don't ever say that to Todd Weber. That's an immediate trigger. Kings fan and Place to Be Nation zone. He despises George Hill. Like, I give him the idea of he's like the pulse of the Kings fan base because he's an ardent Kings fan, and they despise George Hill. I mean, it's not just that he's past his prime and all that stuff. I think people, when he was 31 years old, 32 years old, and signed that contract, I think people knew that his best days were past him. It's the inefficiency and the lack of leadership that just drives people insane.
The lack of leadership in 3 years at Ricky Rubio, career low in assists. And
the difference is Zach Randolph is trying to show Willie Cauley-Stein how to play. Now, yeah. I will say my problem with that is this, and I think Zach Lowe made mention of this in his most recent article, is that Willie Cauley-Stein has the signs to be a fairly, like, eclectic big man. The problem is you can't put him alongside Kufos and Randolph at the same time because it just clogs everything up. Mm-hmm. But the problem is he's not experienced enough and he's not smart enough as a player on the court to play on his own and see all those things. Zebo's got to be the one to show him that.
That, and you have Vince Carter is showing Buddy Hield and Bogdanovich how to shoot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's good. And just the point guard, George Hill, I'm getting my money. Screw you. Don't talk to me.
Now, VC had that flashback game against the Cavaliers. You know, so every now and then you'll get a pretty decent game out of Carter.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't check him at all. Scala Bissier, he looks good when he gets an opportunity. The problem is he doesn't always get the opportunities.
He's still a prospect and he's still incredibly raw. And
that's fair to say. Buddy Hield, he's second on the team in scoring. He's a second year player. I like him. I mean, I liked him when he was with New Orleans before they traded him in the Boogie deal. I mean, I don't think it's a lost cause for him. He shoots 45% from the 3-point line. Like, I still think he has a future.
Okay.
And I like Fox. De'Aaron Fox is going to be the man on that team in about 3 years.
Okay, and then finally, one just to sort of, I don't know, you were going to argue me with this one, but Otto Porter.
Otto Porter's really good. I don't. I mean,
you gave him $100 million. Therefore, you forfeited having a bench.
In 3 years, though, he'll probably be their best player, not named John Wall. He might be better than Bradley Beal.
Okay.
Do you think that's a hot take?
That's fine. I just threw it out there as a question.
Well,
if you're relying on Tim Frazier because you have no backup anything on your team.
So what you're saying is that you like Otto Porter as a player, but you gave up too much to keep him.
You gave up three players,
and you didn't have enough bench as it was to. And now that you've given all that money to him and Beal, you have no room to improve an already decrepit bench.
Yep. So when John Wall goes down, you have Tim Frazier. Who's the backup to Tim Frazier? Satoransky.
Yes.
Ooh.
Who's Gortat's backup? Ian Mahimi.
Who's Ian Mahimi's backup? Justin Smith?
Jason Smith. Dancing Jason Smith.
And Jason Smith's already the backup power forward, so Kelly Oubre is the official backup everybody.
One of the most frustrating teams for me is Washington, because I can't deny that they're good. But they just don't – we were talking about effort and competitiveness. I don't see the competitiveness out of Washington sometimes. It's almost like they lull themselves into a bad situation and they have to fight their way out of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't help you go on record saying, oh, yeah, we go for stats and against bad teams. That's why we
lose to them. That was the quote that came from, I believe, Wall, was it?
Yep.
Yeah, that he said that they're chasing stats. Our team is chasing stats. You know, you know, there's a couple of other weird teams that we didn't really touch on that, you know, we can make mention of depending on like what had happened after we last convened for our podcast. You know, Porzingis, he's still been playing well. The Charlotte Hornets, to your prediction, have really tumbled. Do you feel like there's a way out for them? I know they've won two in a row, but they're at 8 games under .500. They have a worse record than the New York Knicks.
Trades, you gotta either...
You can't trade Kemba Walker, though. Can you trade Batum?
You could trade Kemba Walker. You could trade Batum.
If you trade Kemba Walker, you're blowing up the team. That's the problem with that.
And
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, you say that like that's a bad thing.
Well, that's the thing, is you have to blow up the team. If you have Marvin Williams, who has a few years left, you have Howard, who has a few years left, you have Batum and Kid Gilchrist, who are the same player, who can't shoot.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to blow up the team, you could get something, you know, you could get a superstar for Kemba in return.
The Oklahoma City Thunder have won 8 out of 10 games. What are they doing right? We always been talking the last 2 months about what they're doing wrong with the OK3. What are they doing right?
That's just – they're doing what they should have been doing is just – well, okay, fine. The cheap answer is Russell Westbrook's just been scoring a ton. And
he's been taking the bull by the horns. Yeah.
And Carmelo has been taking less shots.
Okay. And they've been doing a lot more different sets out of the – like they've been doing a lot more wrinkles out of the same sets, trying to get more players involved, like Alex Abrines and Jeremy Grant. And I mean, it's vital for them to get those players involved. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, it's vital to get the team going, because you can't just – that was the problem last year. It was just Russell Westbrook and a bunch of other people. And now then all of a sudden, oh, well, we have George and Carmelo, but – it was just Russell Westbrook shooting a ton and nobody fitting in again. You need to pass the ball around. They need to, you know, be a full team. They weren't a team. They're just an all-star collective.
To give you a regret, but I want to ask you this, because they did get him on the cheap, which shocked everyone in the summer. But now, because of his performance, people are saying that might be suboptimal. Patrick Patterson, is that a regret?
It was, well, they might know how injured and broken down he was.
Well, Toronto obviously did.
Well, Toronto didn't have the money to keep him anyways. That's sort of the problem.
Yeah.
Problem with Toronto is we refuse to spend a dollar over. We can't do anything. So,
I've been waiting a week or two to ask you this. I'm looking forward to your answer here. Is it over for Utah? Or do you think that they can still fight back? I mean, another Gobert injury. I know Donovan Mitchell was Rookie of the Month in the West, but there's a lot that they have to overcome here. They've lost 8 of their last 10. You're 7 games under. You're not that far away from the 8th spot, which is being taken by the New Orleans Pelicans, who are going to probably be I would argue the Pelicans are going to probably finish like 40-42 or 41-41. So you got to hit that mark. Do you think Utah could do it?
No, because like we had sort of mentioned with Rubio, it's not working out. Mm-hmm. He's round peg square hole technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of, you know.
But what about the Clippers ahead of them? Possibly.
That's just a battle for the eighth spot.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's where it is. I don't see like Houston has hit a snag, but they're still 27-11. They're in great shape. San Antonio's got Kawhi Leonard back. They've sort of kind of just like crockpotted him back into the lineup. Like it's one of those things where I think that Cleveland's going to do the same thing with Isaiah Thomas, what San Antonio did with with Kawhi Leonard. They're not going to just like rush him back, but they're still winning games. They're still Pau Gasol's actually played fairly well. Minnesota, you know, they were showing those when the Buffalo Bills made the playoffs in the NFL, they were showing the longest playoff droughts. Second was the Seattle Mariners, and I think the Minnesota Timberwolves were third. Well, that's going to get broken too, because Minnesota's going to make the playoffs.
Yep, Minnesota will make the playoffs, and it'll be a great thing. And
I think Denver's safe. I mean, would you? I know that you talked about their
not exciting, but they're just going to be a 6 or 7 seed. They're going to get wiped out immediately.
But would you say that there's any possibility, barring an injury? Of course, injuries can happen to anybody. Of Denver falling out completely.
Denver, I think, is kind of safe.
Okay, now the East kind of weird. You know, you got Philadelphia there at 500. It's funny because 500 seems to be right at that mark. Like, if you're a 500, you're fighting for the 8th spot in both conferences. If you go under, you're in trouble.
It's just, I'll put it this way. It's funny how a couple years ago, remember they wanted to get rid of conferences because the East was terrible and
it was lack of balance, yes.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden, there's a lack of balance the other way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, the way it's going to fall, the Pacers were sort of surprising, and I think they'll probably hold off Philly at the end because you're asking a lot to keep Embiid healthy,
mm-hmm.
where already he's sort of like, oh, yeah, you have back problems, right? He's like, no.
Can I ask a serious question? The Detroit Pistons are at 21-17. They're still right there at the 7th spot right now as we speak. When they play the Sixers, is it just better for Drummond to just take the day off?
Kind of.
Just to avoid the embarrassment and the shame of getting outplayed by Joel Embiid and getting trashed?
Not embarrassment. That's just a lack of a team defense. That's just saying I'm going to go one-on-one. I can handle it.
Now, Drummond's played well, much better as an assist man for Detroit. That's been a little bit of a revelation for them. Miami just – we talk about them all. They just fight. They just fight. Like, every game you play them, it's a dogfight because they're good defensively. Goran Dragic is still a pretty good scoring point guard. And when Hassan Whiteside's healthy, they can rebound like crazy. You know?
Yeah, but Hassan Whiteside's out and Waiters has come back to earth.
Oh, Waiters Island is getting a little lonely again?
Yeah. And James Johnson, you got 4 years of him. And
I got to tell you, I was looking at some highlight dunk compilations before the year ended. James Johnson, this season alone, had about 3 or 4 of them. That man can throw the hammer down.
Yeah, but not exactly the most
efficient player.
Yeah.
And then Justice Winslow, we're not seeing it yet. Josh Richardson's played fairly well, but I think they made the right decision giving Josh the money instead of Justice. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Milwaukee's at 21-17, which is the same record as Miami and Detroit. And then two spots down from that is Indiana. So you got some interest there. But, I mean, I want to see Charlotte and Brooklyn try to fight a little bit more. But I don't know if they can do it. Chicago, I don't think Chicago has a chance of making the playoffs, but at least they play hard.
Well, speaking of just two random things I'll close on. Brooklyn, remember how I said they're going to play hard and not be terrible this year?
Mm-hmm.
They're playing really hard, and they're not in last place.
And they did that without D'Angelo Russell for a decent period of time.
Or Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, well, Jeremy Lin... My hot take is that I think Jeremy Lin playing would have made him worse. Because now they have to learn how to actually play without him.
Yeah, but still, it's just one of the things that if your best players go out, but all of a sudden you're still, that's the difference between having heart and just, like, phoning it in. And also, how the hell are you going to have it where the Celtics have played six more games than, like, the rest of the league?
Okay, now, are you just doing your local yell here for the Boston Celtics?
Just in general, how are you having scheduling where the Celtics have played 43 games?
They're 33-10. And Toronto is 27-10. That means
how are you playing six more games? That's a lot. How are you having a disparity that big?
You're almost having a Sean McDonough, like, Peter Brady moment there.
Like, that's just strange. It could be any. You could name any team.
Well, look at the bright side. That probably means there are not as many back-to-backs coming up for Boston after the All-Star break, which is going to keep them fresh.
It just so happened to be Boston. How are you going to have one team, period, that has played so many more games than other?
Golden State's already played 40.
They played 40, yes, and then Toronto's played 37. I can see a game or two, but three is a full week.
Do you think? Well, let me ask you this: when they do those prime time and also those cable Wednesday ESPN and Thursday TNT stuff, do you feel like the fact that they have to block out a lot of games for the teams that they want to see play, that influences the disparity early in the season between how many games are played?
I don't know. I just find it sort of odd.
You're saying the six games should have been a little bit more congruent with it.
Six games is a high number. It just so happened to be the Celtics. That's all.
Give me your 30-second Celtic report.
Somehow they managed to keep winning. I don't understand it. And the team is not good because they can't rebound still. And
we do the show, but when Terry Rozier did the steal and dunk against the Pacers, I think we already did. Now, they did lose to the Wizards on Christmas Day, but they've rattled off six wins in a row after that, I believe.
Yeah, but also just
they had that great point. Rockets win on TNT. That was a fascinating game.
Yes, they're extremely feisty, extremely fascinating, and
defensively very good.
Which is, where was this team last year? Oh, yeah, Al Horford, like, legitimate, like, MVP. Well, yeah, he's not going to win, but he should get a vote or two.
No, I think you and I kind of talked in the chat about it because we were watching the bowl games, and I said to you, I said, man, Nike is really pumping out Kyrie's new shoe. Like, you said that is a counteract to Curry and Under Armour, and I said, well, do you think there might be some kind of, like, sneaky jealousy here with LeBron with Nike brand trying to like push Kyrie because I know that they had
LeBron has his Nike has his contract. They're just competing against themselves then. You're taking money away from one division to go to another division. That's not a sound business practice. They're going against, you know, Harden's Adidas.
And I'm not a shoe aficionado, so I can't look at that shoe and say, oh, man, that's so much nicer. Look at the laces. Look at that. Look at how slick it is. And all. I have no idea. But I do know that they pumped out a lot of money for that commercial.
Well, because he is the officially, I guess we'll say, the hottest name of the first half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could say, oh, LeBron. And
he's a highlight reel. He's a highlight reel.
Everybody was talking about only Kyrie and the fact that, you know, it led to the discussion, like a legitimate discussion of, is LeBron holding everybody back in Cleveland?
Do you take a lot of stock into that game on, I believe it was Wednesday, when the Celtics blew him out, even though IT didn't play?
No, because we mentioned with Cleveland, they're just sort of, you know, outside of LeBron, of where I need to play 40 minutes, I'm still going to do it. The team isn't, they're not all there.
Yeah, Boston, I believe, led that one from beginning to end.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those things where they just blew him out. It was 102-88. The leading scorer of all people was Terry Rozier for the Celtics. But yeah, just kind of an ugly game. But I mean, sometimes you got to win those. And Boston has sort of made a habit again out of playing defense first.
The definition of winning ugly. That's just what they do. But any closing thoughts here?
No, I mean, I was just looking at the schedule here as we're getting close to the midway point. I'm sure when we do our next episode, which might be next week, it might be one after that, we'll see. We'll kind of get into our mid-season form and see if we could talk about some things there. But outside of that, you know, it's kind of the same stuff. Your NBA TV games are Portland and Oklahoma City, Sacramento at LA, the Lakers. Oh, I'll say this. My one red alert is that on Wednesday on ESPN, the Thunder go to Minnesota to play the Timberwolves. They've had two really, really good up-and-down games up to this point, so including the one where Andrew Wiggins hit the half-court shot to win the game. So I would keep an eye on that game. And also, Golden State plays Milwaukee. Doesn't Milwaukee always give the Warriors problems?
Yeah.
So that's one that's going to be on ESPN on Friday the 12th. Give me your now the playoffs have started. I know we have a little bit of a leg up since we know some of the results. Give me your Super Bowl winner.
It'll be the Patriots.
It'll be the Patriots?
It'll be the Patriots. It's looking like Patriots and Vikings.
I think on this show I said the Rams would win the Super Bowl. Not looking so smart now, huh?
It's just
whatever
the Patriots.
Whatever I predict, go against it and you're going to be all right. Most
the,
of my friends.
The country is full-fledged in Patriot haterdom, which I am just sick of being in the middle of it. And
if the Titans beat the Patriots, would it be the greatest upset in NFL history?
Oh, I will be so happy.
all the Boston, you know, I'll tell you this, because I'm in a live chat with Place to Be Nation. A lot of Celtics fans. Sneaky lot of Celtics fans. I don't know if it's that.
It's amazing what happens when.
I don't know if it's that Delaware, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Providence area where all of them are just kind of congregating that love listening to all the shows and just happen to be sports fans, but a lot of Celtic fans. I was watching the reaction shots from the Brooklyn game, looking at the background. Jason Tatum had a couple tomahawk dunks. The Boston fans are just jumping up and down in the stands. I'm like, good Lord. This is bandwagon territory here.
It's amazing what happens. You get a superstar with, you know, name brand, and you ride the Isaiah wave. You trade up, you sell at a high point. You continue the high wave, and all of a sudden, you know, once the Knicks get their shit together, you'll be seeing all the Knicks fans with their Porzingis jerseys in the middle of nowhere. And
they've already. I don't want to say they turned heel on Carmelo. He got a nice little going away montage at the Garden, but. That is Chris Stapp's plate. That is his house.
There's no reason he should have had a, you know, he's not the villain there. It was the management against him. He did whatever he could. He came in and still scored 20 a night.
What did you think of Paul Pierce's comments that Thomas shouldn't get like I'm trying to figure out the best phrase to put those montages. Like when you do the montage, when they for return games, and you try to give them like a nice little send off. Pierce says that they shouldn't do that because they're so that because the Cavaliers are the enemy. You don't want to just lend them this like support when you're trying to beat them.
I don't. I don't really understand it. I'll just leave it at that.
You don't understand Pierce's stance, you mean?
Yeah, I don't sort of get it, and times have changed. Mm-hmm. Even since Pierce was big and, you know, Brooklyn was the enemy, all of a sudden he had a huge tribute.
Did Kyrie get one on opening night? I don't even know.
I think they had something for him.
Yeah.
I want to say they did.
Yeah, a lot of lack of beef in the first two games. I'm going to say that for sure. A lot of lack of beef. You know, now the first one was obviously muddied by the Hayward injury. Everybody had their mind on that, and nobody was thinking about, you know, oh, look at LeBron and Kyrie. That would look like a hard foul there. Like, that did not happen at all in the Boston game. I was watching it fairly closely.
It wasn't like Paul George. Those were two people who were, you know, Kyrie did everything. He wasn't like, I want to publicly trade. I want to leave. He was just, I'm doing my thing.
The Paul George one was weird. It wasn't even like, it wasn't even hatred. It was almost like when you break up with somebody and you're at the same party and you're kind of mad at each other, but you're kind of sorry it's over and you just kind of like sink into misery. That's kind of how that felt. It wasn't like a reactive type of scenario where George was playing angry. Like I remember that happened with LeBron when he went back to Cleveland after he signed with the Heat. Like he played angry. Like he wanted to stick it to the Cavaliers for the fans turning on him and booing him. With George, it didn't feel it. It almost seemed like he was sad, you know?
Yeah, it did sort of seem like that.
But all right. Let's not end on a sad note. It's you know, we got the new year that's finally here, and things should be looking up, right?
That's the goal. The goal was to be positive this year.
That's your resolution? Be positive?
let's just be happy. Let's show some good things for once. There's a lot of negativity let in 2017 all around.
Yeah, I have a good Donald Trump book to read on my Kindle about that pretty soon. on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, everybody. We'll see y'all again.